It's 5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Tuesday, December 16th on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, a pilot program in Sitka prepares to launch a hybrid fishing boat. But first, powerful winds blasted south-central Alaska for the second weekend in a row, with gusts topping 70 miles per hour in parts of Anchorage and the Matanuska-Susitna borough. National Weather Service meteorologist Carson Jones says the winds are less severe than last weekend's Matsu storm, which prompted a local disaster declaration, but they're still significant.
It wasn't quite as strong as the previous event, but Palmer was still reporting winds near or above 80 miles an hour. And then Anchorage had some OBS and Jay Bear and Ted Stevens that were above 70 miles an hour.
Officials did not report any major damage. In Anchorage, they said winds led to downed trees, some roof damage, and power outages. The Anchorage Fire Department also warned of icy roads. Jones says a high-pressure system along the Alaska-Canada border is feeding cold weather into a large jet stream over western Alaska. That jet stream is steering the frigid, windy weather across Anchorage and the Matsu, and Jones says it likely isn't going anywhere in the next 2 weeks.
It's going to remain dry and cold and breezy with chances for elevated winds. Really, probably until maybe the solstice is when we start to see maybe a pattern change.
Current weather projections predict the jet stream will break down in certain spots, pulling in cold air from Siberia as well as the Yukon, Jones says. He says that'll spread frigid weather across the state.
As we move on into next weekend, we will have cold air coming in from both areas, so there's a chance for more widespread below average temperatures for the whole state.
Anchorage, the Matsu, and the Kenai Peninsula are forecast to see low temperatures at or below zero the rest of the week. Governor Mike Dunleavy is dropping a longtime priority ahead of next year's legislative session. At his annual holiday open house last week, Dunleavy told reporters he is not planning to revive his push to reform the state schools.
You know, I've always said this for year after year after year, that once the issue of money is settled, nobody wants to talk about policy. So unfortunately for us, I think we're going to skip over that this year, not from my perspective, but I don't think the legislature, enough of the people in the legislature, really have a desire to fix the outcomes.
Improving the state's public schools was the top issue in the last two legislative sessions. Dunleavy vetoed a series of bills seeking to boost public school funding, saying they did not do enough to improve student performance. He instead called for a variety of reforms that he said would help Alaska's low test scores, in part by boosting charter schools and correspondence homeschools. But lawmakers overcame Dunleavy's vetoes to break the stalemate earlier this year. Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Himshute co-chairs the House Education Committee. She says lawmakers will continue to look at ways to boost students' test scores, even with budgets expected to be tight this year.
We need to ensure the best value for the dollar. Obviously, accountability is very important. At the same time, we need to make sure that our kids have opportunities. And if we look to other states, there's a lot going on in other states that we could be doing here in Alaska.
She says she'd also like to see a smaller boost to public school funding this year to keep up with inflation. Representative Andy Story, a Juneau Democrat, who also co-chairs the House Education Committee, says she wants lawmakers to override Dunleavy's veto of a corporate tax bill tied to education funding.
Those dollars are scheduled to go for reading intervention and career tech. And that would just, to me, be a game changer.
Backers pitched the tax bill as a way to extract more state money from outside tech companies who sell to Alaskans. Dunleavy said he could not support it without a larger fiscal plan. Dunleavy said he hoped lawmakers would pass a bill that would create a pilot program of schools run by Alaska Native tribes, but Dunleavy told reporters his main goals for his final year are largely in other areas, including a forthcoming fiscal plan and preparation for a possible North Slope gas pipeline. Lawmakers reconvene in Juneau on January 20th. And finally, what could be Alaska's first official hybrid electric fishing boat is one step closer to hitting the water. KCAW's Hope McKenney reports the boat is part of a pilot program based in Sitka to address high fuel costs for the fishing fleet and maybe make fishing just a little bit greener.
It's a cold, snowy day down by Sitka's marine haulout. Inside the giant, unheated commercial workspace, I can still see my breath as men weld and work on boat parts around me. Off to one side is a giant engine, or should I say two engines, one white and one dark gray, stuck together in an intricate pattern of metal and tubing. This engine is hybrid electric and is about to be put in the 50-foot fishing vessel, Mirage.
We hauled out at the end of October, early November. Cracked a lot of eggs, making this big omelet.
Ben Mathias has been working to adapt and install the hybrid engine for the boat's owner the past couple of months. He says they're pioneering this technology to the fleet to prove that hybridization is viable.
Diesel, you know, is reliable, but as we're looking to save beyond those low-hanging fruits, where do we go? And we decided that diesel electric is the new The way forward.
The program is funded by a $500,000 grant from the Department of Energy and includes converting two hybrid commercial fishing boats and one fully electric mariculture boat. While the initial investment is high, Mathias says hopefully it'll pay off for fishermen down the line.
The margins for fishing are getting tighter. You know, the price per pound of what people can market the fish for or what's purchased at the plant is lower. And fuel and all operating costs are higher. So most are still tied to going to spaces A, B, and C to go get the fish, and even sometimes having to work harder to find that same amount of fish to pay the bills. So as we move forward to the next options to save and become more profitable, this is it.
Another benefit is helping to address the climate impacts of fossil fuels and make it healthier for fishermen on board who are often exposed to harmful fumes. Fishermen might even be able to market their product as greener than the next guy and may be able to get a better price for their fish.
We think there are health benefits for people, for fishermen, as well as for the ocean and for people's bottom line.
That's Linda Bankin, a commercial fisherman and director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, or ALFA, which is pioneering the program. She says they've worked for years to find ways for the fleet to operate more efficiently by changing certain boat operations or making certain modifications to vessels. And after a lot of input from people at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, they identified hybrid technologies as the next best step for fishing boats operating out of small communities.
At a national level, there's definitely a lot of interest across the country in hybrid or fully electric vessels. Folks in Maine at the Island Institute there have been working with their fleet to look at electric and hybrid. There's some work being done in Norway on electric and hybrid or alternative fuels. But up here, we're really breaking new ground.
Jeff Turner owns the Mirage. He fishes for spot prawns, salmon, and halibut throughout the Gulf of Alaska. Turner says he used to longline out of Kodiak, which took about 3 days to travel to one way. At the end of the trip, he says, he'd rack up about $3,500 in fuel costs. If he could knock that down by a couple thousand dollars by longlining on a battery, he says that could be huge.
Hybridization for me started with, oh my God, I'm spending so much on fuel. There's got to be a better way. This grant money came up and there was interest. I raised my hand and said, I'll try this. I'd love to save fuel.
Throughout the process, Turner says he's been learning a lot and there's still a lot left to learn. But he says he's ready to install the engine and hopefully hit the water in January.
I'm really excited about the data they're going to collect, how it changes the way I fish, and what other people can do with it too. So, I mean, it's exciting to every day I go out, I'm fishing and researching. So it's kind of nice that way too.
Mathias, the marine electrician, says that collecting data is going to be important when proving to other fishermen that converting to hybrid energy will be worth the investment.
I'm excited to see the technology move forward, advance the fleet. We're running mostly on 100-plus-year-old technology moving boats around. And I can understand, you know, grandpa did it, dad did it, it worked for them, and it's working for me, type deal. But as we advance to new technologies, I'm excited to see this stuff come forward. I look forward to serving the fleet, both in a traditional sense, and then in this new realm of technology.
After the Mirage hits the water, Matthias will be working on installing an electric propulsion system on a gillnetter from Juno and setting up a fully electric mariculture vessel in Kodiak. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Hope McKenney.
And that'll be all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Eric Stone in Juneau, Wesley Early in Anchorage, and Hope McKenney in Sitka. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Have a great night.